Hello and welcome to Books on the Go, a podcast where we talk about our book of the week. I'm Anna Bailey-Karras and I'm here with Annie Waters. Hi, Annie.
Hello.
And this week we've been reading The Glass Hotel by Emily St. John Mandel, and we're once again in the outdoor cafe.
Oh, yes.
So to speak.
The studio has moved.
AKA the front garden studio. So excuse any traffic noise. We had a random helicopter last week.
Oh, did you?
Which was quite exciting for the... this little suburb. Now, we've been reading The Glass Hotel, but first let's talk book news. And this week the Women's Prize shortlist has been announced. So great excitement. And we've actually done pretty well as far as reading the shortlist goes. So drum roll, the shortlist is Dominicana by Angie Cruz, A Thousand Ships. No, hang on a second. I'll do this in alphabetical order. So the shortlist is Dominicana by Angie Cruz, Girl, Woman, Other by Bernardine Evaristo, A Thousand Ships by Natalie Haynes, The Mirror and the Light by Hilary Mantel, Hamnet by Maggie O'Farrell, and Weather by Jenny Offal. So
I'm very impressed at your on-the-go re-alphabetizing of your list there.
I've scrolled this list down and I just decided to try to do it in alphabetical order, but I didn't have the authors' names written down. So that was a challenge for early morning.
You did very well.
So we've actually read A Thousand Ships. Did you do that?
I did that with Natalie Haynes
and absolutely loved that. I was so thrilled to see it getting the recognition. And for the listeners who may not know that book, that's a retelling of the Trojan War from the women's perspective. And it is the Greek myth retelling that I had been waiting for after reading Circe and The Silence of the Girls. And they were good. Circe I did love, and The Silence of the Girls, there's a lot of good things about that, and she's such an extraordinary writer. But this was the one that I just loved and enjoyed and thought it actually had the Greek myth sensibility but was very funny and really rich and at the same time just a really easy, engaging, fun read. So I was really glad because I think it was a fairly quiet book it was nice to see that being recognised. And Girl, Woman, Other by Bernardine Evaristo we did recently on the podcast, and that doesn't need much more recognition because it just won the Booker Prize.
Yes.
But still thrilling to see it on the list and deservedly. I think it was expected to be.
Oh yeah, absolutely. There. Yeah, I think it's a big groundbreaking novel and really interesting in form and shape and character, and lots of good things about it.
Yeah. Weather by Jenny Offal. We did that, didn't we?
Yes. Yeah. Only recently.
And really loved that. And again, I thought that would probably be on the list. It's a very short book though.
It is such a good book for the moment though.
Yes. Lizzie, the librarian who starts having a climate change panic, and it slowly develops from there. But in a short book, she does pack a lot in.
Oh, yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how that goes when you reread it and how it sort of stands the test of time. And
I read it twice
with
in a short amount
fragments.
Of time and got more from it the second time. So I think it is a book that has lots of layers and lots of depth.
Yes. And The Mirror and the Light, of course, we did recently.
Yes.
I was a little bit surprised that made the short list. I wasn't surprised it would be on the long list, but I didn't think it was tight enough to really warrant in this competition.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I see it more as a Booker winner than a Women's Prize winner.
Yes.
But
that's right.
It's also not. I would begrudge it anything.
Oh, no. No. I mean, Hilary Mantel, superb.
Oh, yeah.
But I just didn't have the joy in this book that I did with the first two.
Yeah, it's not as joyous.
Now, Dominicana is on my TBR.
Yes.
Anyway.
You've been very excited about that.
Has it? Well, that initially came onto my radar as a book that people were recommending to read instead of reading American Dirt.
Oh, okay.
Which had some negative publicity because it was hugely publicised and marketed as the Hispanic book of the
moment,
the year
and
with a seven-figure advance to
Janine Cummins.
Janine Cummins.
Yeah.
But she really is a white author with a Puerto Rican grandmother or something like
not
that.
Much
but
lived
but
experience
I think you'd mentioned as well that you'd read it and it didn't quite.
I read the first
ring
10
with,
pages.
Yeah, and the authenticity didn't come through. And so, in that context, Dominicana had come recommended. Yeah. So I thought, well, I might read that one. And now that it's on the shortlist, I'll definitely read it. But yeah. I've also heard mixed reviews. Okay. It hasn't been overwhelming.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not overwhelmed. I'm not completely sold on it.
Well, you'll have to give it a go. Sometimes that's the best way to go into a book, though, with not expecting it to be absolutely glorious, but kind of knowing that there's some equivocation and kind of figuring out which side you fall on.
And sometimes books that you love are not perfect books.
No.
And sometimes a perfect book is too neat and tidy and sort of MFA-ish, if you know what I mean. It's been too worked. And sometimes a messy book can have moments of glory and genius that you just fall in love
with.
More emotion, maybe. even when you see some of the flaws. So I don't mind that, but let's see. Wait and see.
Yeah.
And Hamnet is, I'm just... have heard nothing but raves. So on the other side of the coin, huge expectations for that.
And huge subject matter as well. So that's about Shakespeare and his wife and the loss of their young son, Hamnet, at 11 or so.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I love Maggie O'Farrell's writing.
Oh, I can't wait.
Yeah, I'm really
Cannot wait. I always get her mixed up with Maggie Nelson. Isn't that terrible?
Oh, they're quite different.
I know. It's just terrible.
Names in the similar spectrum of the alphabet though.
Yes. But omissions from the list, I did hear someone saying they would have preferred Red at the Bone by Jacqueline Woodson to Weather. So maybe that could have been swapped out, but that could be controversial.
Mm. And I haven't read that one. So
the other one that I loved that was, again, a quieter book was How We Disappeared by Jingjing Li. I thought that was a really beautiful book. And I could have happily seen that in the shortlist instead of, let's say, The Mirror and the Light, for example. Yeah. But that's, again, you know, it was a very strong long list.
Yeah.
So
it's always tricky, isn't it, picking what has to go.
Oh, very tricky. And the judges said that it was a long Zoom meeting. And quite...
impassioned.
Quite impassioned. Mm. And so, as you can imagine, so that's the Women's Prize shortlist. And now on to our book of the week, The Glass Hotel by Emily St. John Mandel, but I think Annie has a correction.
I have a feeling I listened to an interview with her years and years ago, and I think she says her surname St. John Mandel,
okay.
But we'll avoid saying her name altogether. Anyway, her name is Emily St. John or St. John Mandel. She is from Canada. She was born on Denman Island, which is a little island off of the coast of BC. So she has written 5 novels. This is her 5th novel. Her most recent novel before this, Station 11, got her a whole bunch of fame and accolades. So she was nominated for the National Book Award, the Penn Faulkner Award, and the Bailey's Women's Prize, as it was then. And she won the Arthur C. Clarke Award, which is a science fiction award, and the Toronto Book Award. And so her other 3 books, I've read all of her books. I thought I had missed one, but I've actually read them all. And they're more kind of... that was a dystopic fantasy talking about what would happen if a virus were to wipe out 99% of humanity, which feels very prescient at the moment.
It's come up on a lot of lists of if you want a good pandemic read.
I think because she focuses more on the people and what happens to people in that kind of traumatic event rather than the gore and the horror and the
apocalypse or the dystopian element is really just a backdrop.
It's a setting.
I loved that book, and you know me.
I'm not a fantasy reader.
I'm not a dystopian reader, but it is like with any. I mean, a good fantasy I would read.
Yeah,
and that's because any good book, it makes you care about the characters, and that's certainly what she did with Station 11. So
her 3 previous books to that were more kind of noir mysteries, often about someone who's disappeared and someone who's trying to find them. Also with a bit of a metaphysical element, sometimes with a bit of a strangeness or a ghostliness or a something weird happening, but very subtle. So this one, I think, kind of returns to her previous work before Station 11. So The Glass Hotel has a lot of plot elements, but very roughly it's about Vincent, who her mother died when she was very young. She has a half-brother called Paul, who is a talented musician and composer but also a heroin addict. And Vincent ends up working in this hotel on the island of Kayet, where they both grew up in BC. And she meets the owner of the hotel, this very wealthy entrepreneur called Jonathan Alkaidis, and they end up becoming a couple, and she leaves the hotel. And at the very beginning of the book, you know that she dies from falling off of a container ship.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's the first page.
Hang on. I'd forgotten that.
Yeah, well, I think that's...
But do we know that's her?
Well, oh, no, but I think it's really easy to put it together.
I'm still, just for listeners, I'm about 10 or 20 pages away from the ending. So I've just felt like I've got this suspense that I'm in. She did begin at the end, plummeting down the side of the ship. Okay. Yes.
So, yeah. Okay. So I think you knew from the very beginning that
but
Vincent
it doesn't
dies.
Say who it is.
No, it doesn't say who it is, but I put that together almost immediately.
Yes. I haven't seen my brother in a decade, but I know that it's him. I do feel like I'm spoiling it for the listeners, but this is literally page one that I'm looking at.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, she dies by falling off a container ship. Or she has fallen off a container ship. You don't know that she dies, but I think it's fairly obvious. And Jonathan Alkitis ends up going to jail for a crime. And
Ponzi scheme.
Yeah, a Ponzi scheme.
Sort of inspired by the Bernie Madoff.
Yeah. So that's what the plot circles around, but it jumps forward and back in time. You get lots of different perspectives from all of the different people involved in this. So that's kind of the starting off point. What did you think of this book?
Well, as I said, I'm almost at the end and I'm really loving it. So just it's what I wanted it to be, I suppose. Okay. But I haven't digested it yet. So this is what I'm at the point where I'm thoroughly enjoying it. I don't know how it will, you know, once I've sat with it for a few days, will it stay with me or not, you know, how that sort of how strong it is. But as I said, I loved Station 11 and I came to that quite late. I felt as if I kept hearing it being recommended and it's almost like a modern classic in the way people talk about it. And so I finally read that a couple of years ago. And so I was very excited to hear that Emily St. John Mandel had a new book coming out. And as you say, a different subject matter, really. Mm. But I love that premise of taking the Bernie Madoff Ponzi scheme and going behind the scenes of, well, what were those people like? Who were the people who invested in it? Why would they do that? Why did he do that? And who, you know, what would it be like to be his wife, for example, to live in that rarefied world? And then how did that begin? What were those people's beginnings, perhaps on a remote island in Canada or in a grungy basement flat in Vancouver or whatever? So you go really behind the scenes and a little bit back in time. I loved the idea of the hotel on Vancouver Island, the cedar glass, beautiful palace almost, it's described as. So all of that was appealing and, yes, it did live up to that. You know, it was sort of we talked about comfort reads and we'll be doing an episode in a minute about isolation reading and reading when you're a little bit distracted by the news and you just want something engaging and comforting, and it hit the mark for all of those things. And I think it's her tone. So before I read The Glass Hotel, I had just been reading a very beautiful but slow burn book, which wasn't quite suiting me for the moment that we're in. And so this was just refreshing in the sense of a book that she makes it easy for you without really dumbing things down too much, but she does sort of let the reader in. She's got that engaging tone and I loved, just going to those fun places. And I really see it on screen. So now the noise that we're dealing with this week, it's not a helicopter, it's some sort of
street sweeper.
Council street sweeper.
Good.
And that's because we're in autumn here. So there is a need for the street sweepers, but apologies. So I loved that. Yeah, it felt like a movie where you have different scenes and one of them is, for example, at the glamorous hotel on Vancouver Island, they're behind the bar and Vincent, who's the woman, the main protagonist, is polishing glasses and Walter's trying to move pot plants around and palm trees to cover up the graffiti on the glass, which was both sort of comical, a little bit disturbing and just fun. Like I love that kind of hanging out behind the bar, what they talk about. And then there's someone sitting at the bar who's a shipping magnate or he works in the shipping company. And then they're waiting for the owner of the hotel to fly in, but that's Jonathan, he's a bit delayed. And she just sets a scene so beautifully. And what I appreciate about her writing is she's quite economical. So whilst it's very engaging and easy to read, she will put in just a little paragraph like a beautiful scene or a portrait of a character or just a movement that someone does. So someone might light a cigarette or something in between, and you just there's a lot of action and enough dialogue to give you everything without, and it is quite fragmented. I think that it's been described as kaleidoscopic in structure.
Yeah, I read a review in The Atlantic that called it a jigsaw puzzle missing its box.
Oh, how interesting.
And that is exactly how I felt about
it. Yes, that you didn't get the answers.
No.
But just on the so what I mean by her writing is there's this picture of Vincent as a 13-year-old girl when her mother's gone missing. In the way Dad and Grandma stared at Vincent, Paul heard everything they were all refraining from mentioning. Vincent's new blue hair, her plummeting grades and black eyeliner, her staggering loss.
Mm.
I just love that. It just she and then she won't go on about it,
no.
But she just does it quite lightly. The sense of humour, the satire, the way Vincent moves through the party telling people she was delighted to meet them. And it's just, it, you know, she does that with a sense of humour. The way Raphael describes the hotel to Walter when he's hiring Walter as the manager, saying, you know, it's in the wilderness. Everyone with money wants to be in the wilderness. But I'll let you in on a secret. They don't really want to be in the wilderness. They want to be near the wilderness, looking onto the wilderness. And he calls it wilderness adjacent, which I thought was so – and it's so true.
Yeah, it is so true.
So all those astute observations. But it'll be interesting, Annie, to see if you thought she actually – brings it together into something, because I just loved all those pieces, but I haven't had time yet to sit back and think, does it actually then come together? But no, the writing, the character, the fun, I wouldn't say the characters are leaping out at me, but there's enough there for me to be engaged with them, if not completely caring about them.
Yeah.
And that's by nature of just who they are and what they're doing. They're not overly sympathetic, but they all do sort of ring true in their own way. So I love all of that. And just there are some themes coming through about ghosts and alternative lives, which I haven't totally thought through, but that's certainly something she's dropping. There's the motif of ghosts, and I'm not into the supernatural side of that, but I can see why. Hello, street sweeper.
Back.
So yeah, there is that motif of ghosts and people reflecting on ghosts of people who are no longer with them, or even alternate lives that they didn't lead. Mm. But what did you think, Annie? Did it come together for you?
No,
didn't.
So I think I can appreciate all the things you've said. I think it's a very sophisticated novel, and perhaps it's a me problem right now, because I think where you said that you were finding it fast-paced and that all the fragments kind of keep you moving along, I found that really disorienting and really disjointed. And I think I just wanted one through line. And there are so many plot elements and so many characters, and you get everyone's perspective on all of these different events. You know, it's not just one single event that you see everyone's viewpoint on. You kind of get everyone's little lives in and around this kind of 30 or 40 year time period.
Yeah.
And for me, I just couldn't keep them all in my head. I don't think I got enough of each of them to keep them clear. And I think I was just struggling for, a one plot line.
Pick a character and stick with them.
Either a character line or a plot line, but not both. Like, because it's fragmented in both the structure and the character and the plot, it just wasn't enough for me. So I could tell that it was a sophisticated book, and I could tell – I trusted her that she knew where she was going, because I think I've really enjoyed her previous books, and so I kept wanting it to be – more.
Yeah.
But I just felt like I kept waiting for the story to start. So, you know, I got to page 150 and was kind of like, oh, maybe this is the beginning of the story.
Yeah.
But there was never any moment.
It's not quite clear what the plot is.
Yeah.
And I'm at the point now, I'm near the end, but I'm wondering, because to me, one of the climactic moments is, and we, of course, we know that it's coming, because we know what happened to Bernie Madoff, and we know, I think we know early on that Jonathan is in jail.
There's some foreshadowing. Yeah.
So it's not as if we don't see it coming, but it's still quite a climactic moment that his Ponzi scheme comes crashing down and the police arrest him, or the FBI finally get their act together and they come and arrest him. And so there is a bit of a build up to that where you know that it's coming, and really he knows that it's coming. But it still, you know, Vincent doesn't know, for example. And so there's all of that. There's an element of suspense there. But I think to me that's more of the climax of, well, you know, after that I feel as if the main action has happened, whereas such as like it
because
is.
You
but
knew
that's not
that.
Really the plot. I don't think she intends
to be.
Well,
I think the plot is her – I think Vincent is the main character and it's her trajectory through life and kind of, I guess, about reinvention and the ways in which people can – live so many different lives in the space of a short time.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think it just...
And she's pragmatic about that.
Yeah,
so she's very
absolutely.
Practical about
well,
if I have to...
Well, she grew up really poor and she lost her mother really young. So I think those are very...
She's had to survive on her wits and by being who, you know, who whatever fits the
mold.
Requirement
yeah,
for
exactly.
that job or for that relationship.
Yeah.
And then there's an interesting line where Olivia... who's an artist and an investor of into Jonathan's scheme, says something like, oh, is she just a chameleon? There's nothing more boring than a chameleon or something. She just finds that
really
boring.
Well, she doesn't think
really
she's
boring.
A serious person, which I think is an interesting... I think there's definitely people in the world who divide people into serious and unserious people.
Yeah.
And I think that she makes that snap judgment on not much, and I think that Vincent is a very serious person and that we get that.
No, it is. I wondered, if there's a lot of ideas and fabulous observations, but does that, is it enough to give you
I think that's almost like that will stay with me and I'll keep thinking about those things, but the experience of reading the book was not enjoyable for me. I really had to work at it and, you know, it's quite a short book, but it took me a whole week to read and I just kept not wanting to pick it up, you know. I just, and then when I did pick it up, I was kind of like, oh, yeah, this is nice.
Like
it's
me
well
with
written.
Drive Your Plough.
Yeah, maybe. You know, that you can see that it's very worthy. And then I was reading these reviews this morning trying to piece together my thoughts and thought, oh, everyone else has seen the same things but just got a different feeling from it. You know, I think it was just a bit cold and a bit too polished for me.
I know what you mean. There is a knowing humour that is... I didn't feel that it was cold, but I know what you mean, that it is almost a little bit cynical or a little bit...
Yeah, which usually
it's
I like.
Too quick to be satirising things that are obvious to satirise, that are, all, you know, like she has Vincent and her friend Mirella sitting by the pool at one stage because that's the life that they have at this stage of their lives. Not always, but at this point they're sitting by the pool and it's very luxurious and it's almost too easy to poke fun at that.
Yeah. Oh,
you know, at that trophy wife.
Mirella as
experience.
A character was really interesting. I like that these two women who both came from not moneyed backgrounds have risen to wealth predominantly through their partners and they can see each other as I guess having more substance because they haven't they've had to forge a personality in the absence of this country of wealth that they both live in for that moment. But, yeah, I don't know. I think that I agree with you absolutely that there are scenes that are just leap off the page, but I think it was just the interconnectivity that didn't quite fit.
Yes.
It was like – so
I'm curious why she chose that structure because –
Well, I think I've got several opinions about this.
Yeah, let's have it. Hang on a minute.
So this is why I think it's a bit too polished because I could think – I can see in the structure why she's done it. So one of Vincent's little quirks is that she, when she's 13 and loses her mother, her grandmother gives her a video recorder and says, look, when I was having a very bad time in my life when I was a young person, someone gave me a film camera, and told me to just record what was around me. And it did actually take me out of myself and gave me a position to be behind the camera and a bit of distance, I guess, from the grief that she's going through. And so she develops this habit of filming 5-minute scenes, presumably with the camera very steady, of quite boring things, you know. So she films the sea, she films the beach with her friends, but she carries this habit all through her life. And so that's how the structure of it kind of appeared to me, of these little capsules of here's a moment.
Yeah.
Look at this moment. Here's another moment with no kind of presentation or no kind of context between them. And you have to fit them together
and
as you
fit
go
them
through.
Together.
Yeah.
And in the same way, it's almost like buzzing around, following a group of people who connect to each other mm. and you just drop in on them from day to day. Mm. So every time you drop in on them, they're in a different scene, mm. obviously, and sometimes they've moved countries or they've moved jobs mm. or whatever, but you just drop in and check in on them. What mm. are they up to today? And then you move over to where their sister is or their father yeah. or their
it's
investor.
It's all kind of tangential.
Yeah.
But I think what didn't quite work for me, because I really like novels like this usually, like I loved Jennifer Egan's Visit to the Goon Squad is quite like yeah. this. Yeah. It reminds me a bit of David Mitchell, yes. the way that he writes, you know, with that really kaleidoscopic view and you go about between different characters in between the novel or even between different novels. Mm. And so something that I hadn't picked up when I read it but realized when I was reading reviews this morning was that Leon Provant, who's the shipping magnate yes. in this, is also in Station 11.
Yes, and I heard that there were characters and I knew that I would yeah, never remember no, their names,
Miranda
but I'd heard
well
that some of the characters had come across.
Is his assistant in the in Station 11, and she's his assistant in this too, but she ends up in this becoming a CEO. So it's almost like there's like a mirror world or some kind of
yeah.
I think she is looking at yeah, the ways that small changes can make big differences in people's lives and that kind of thing. But yeah, the other thing that the structure reminded me of was the feeling of being on the waves or in the water and just kind of bobbing about. And you know, when you like, if you're in quite heavy
surf,
you're
getting seasick.
Yeah, well, you feel a bit seasick, but even if you're swimming, yeah. you know, and the horizon keeps shifting. And so, yeah. you know, you're bobbing up and seeing one thing over here and then you see another little person over in the distance that way. And so I think it, and that's why it was so disorienting to me. Because I couldn't get a grasp on anything. It
you
just
didn't
all
have
felt
firm
so
footing.
Intangible. And as soon as I felt like I started to get a footing in one scene or one person's life, we would jump to another person and back in time or forward in time, and I just couldn't keep up.
Yeah, because it did have the time shift as well. So I can understand that mm. that you just when you feel like, okay, we're in prison or whatever, mm. then it would shift back in time again with it and also with a different character. Mm. So that yeah. is that is tricky. And I'm just curious because we're used to reading now novels that are polyphonic or that have and Amanda and I just did Vernon Subutex, which mm-hmm. is told by each different character, but they each get a whole chapter.
Yeah.
And then you
yeah.
move on to the next character. So you do feel like you've had a whole story. Mm. It's almost a series of interlinking stories yeah, like yeah. Elizabeth Strout yeah, with Olive yeah. Kitteridge. Yeah. You do get different perspectives, but each one can stand on its own, whereas this one,
and it adds to the whole.
They're only ever yeah. fragments yeah. of the story, yeah. which I didn't mind just because I did feel like I was watching a movie mm. where it just moves from scene to scene. I just found it easy to read in the sense that it yeah. was of our time.
Yeah.
It's people we know or recognise. Yeah. In that sense, there was nothing too challenging. It wasn't out, you know, because I've been reading a few things out of my comfort zone. So I was just really happy to be, you know, in a fairly recognisable
yeah.
world. And that, in fact, that's probably, if anything, my criticism of it. It's a very white book. It's a very, yeah. I mean, you've obviously, you know, if you you know the premise that it's the Ponzi scheme. It's obviously rich white people problems, yeah. which is fun. And yeah. that can be fun. But that's probably the only thing that I would say, well, do we care
in this
what
world?
Happened to,
yeah.
I mean, do we
yeah.
care what happened to Jonathan, for example? There's not enough so far
yeah.
for me to care at all about Jonathan.
No.
Even though she's made him quite bland almost.
Yeah.
He's not a... he's not very
evil. No.
And I almost want him to be a bit more evil mm. in a way. Like I imagine someone like that would be really arrogant or really immoral or something.
I would imagine
they'd have a huge
flaw.
Gap. There'd be
yeah.
some sort of hole inside yeah. them that's...
I think he can be yeah. oblivious to other people's experiences, which I think a lot of people are, you know, regardless of position or power. Mm. But I think he, yeah, just has a kind of blind spot. I think he thinks that money is the best thing and the only thing, and that's why he kind of enters into this scheme, because he wants to cover some debts that
yeah.
he
Well, and we know from The Wolf of Wall Street, if you, I actually read the Jordan Belfort book, yeah, like his own story, and that there are people like that.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. There's lots of people just, like you know, that.
But also, do we care? I mean, do we care at the moment about a rich white man who then had to go to jail? Yeah. Does it matter?
Well, and you see the effect on all the people around him and the way that the other people kind of react to that. And for Vincent, because she was raised in this poor, very simple life, she easily slips back to that persona as just like, okay, well, I'll go get work as in a bar and I'll train as a chef and I'll move onto a shipping container and live out the rest of my life on a shipping container because that's my dream.
Yeah, she's more adaptable. Yeah, but I haven't – and the only other thing I haven't got yet is other than you have to think about it yourself is a sense of how – devastating it was for his victims. We know that it was. I mean, intellectually we know.
But I don't feel
as if we're really caring about them. But that's okay. I mean it's not that sort of book where you're really invested in one victim and sometimes you only need one to bring it home to the reader.
Yeah, I think Olivia is supposed to fulfill that role because she puts her father's
You get more of Olivia. She's the one, but the others it's just a glimpse, I think, like Faisal or some of the other ones.
But for her, I think it's more about the loss of friendship and the loss of...
Of course.
You know, she cares about the money, obviously, but she's more upset about the loss of trust and the fact that she got duped in this, relationship.
Friend.
Exactly.
Mm. Yeah. So, how interesting. Yeah. Well, I'm recommending it. I think it fits the bill of that book that falls between literary fiction and really accessible, fun read. Mm. I think it sort of hits that sweet spot for me. But will it stay with you for years and years? I don't know.
Yeah.
But Annie, you're not recommending?
I don't think so. I think it's probably – it's just not for me and it's definitely not for right now. I think it's not as good a book. It's not as strong a book perhaps as Station 11.
Yes. If
you're just wanting a really pacey, fun read, that was what that was, whereas this for me dragged a bit. But, give it a read. Tell us what you think.
Yeah, let us know if you've read it. I'd be interested to hear. And so that was The Glass Hotel. And next week we will be doing – well, we're going to do some isolation reading recommendations for this time. And also I'll be back with Amanda. We are reading The Bass Rock by Evie Wilde. Cool. So looking forward to that. So we'll see you then. In the meantime, you can follow us on Facebook at Books on the Go. You can email us at booksonthegopodcast@gmail.com, and I'm on Instagram, Litzy, and Twitter at A Bailey Karras. And Annie?
I'm on Instagram, Litzy, and Twitter at Mr_Annie.
Great. We'll see you soon. Bye.
Bye.